Hello, and welcome to Rapid Access Radio, presented by ProTech Central, Episode 3, for January 2025. Hi, I'm Sean Mullen, your host. Today's guest is Jeremy Eekhoff, fire protection engineer and plans reviewer with the Des Moines, Iowa Fire Department. Just runs about 20 minutes. Friends, today we have the high honor of visiting with Jeremy Eekhoff, who is a fine young fire protection engineer working with the Des Moines, Iowa Fire Department. He's been with them for several years in a plan review position, as well as witness testing and those types of things that AHJs get involved with. And Jeremy, welcome to the microphone of Rapid Access Radio.
Thanks, Sean. Excited to be here and excited to chat about all this stuff that we've worked so hard on and are passionate about. So appreciate it.
Well, I do know you're passionate because you do such a fine job. And with that, could you share with a little bit with our listeners about your background and how you came into the position that you currently serve in?
Sure. So like you mentioned, I'm a fire protection engineer here at the Des Moines Fire Department. And really what that amounted to is historically there was firefighters that were kind of getting promoted into positions where they're doing a lot of these technical plan reviews and calculation reviews and things like that, where their career and experience was on how to fight fires as a firefighter or how to lead firefighters as like an officer. Eventually the Des Moines Fire Department kind of looked at like, how can we improve that? And how can we get someone to focus in on this that has more of that experience? So that's where my now supervisor, Fire Marshal Lund, was the first fire protection engineer here at the Des Moines Fire Department. So he kind of made that shift and transition from firefighters being promoted into that role to now hiring someone that more of went to school or has experience in these types of things to take on that responsibility. So we've had good luck with that. My background, actually, I went to Iowa State for construction engineering. I quickly realized that working for a big general contractor wasn't all that appealing for me at the time. So I wanted to keep my roots in Iowa and not be moving around or not be dealing with some of the headaches that those guys get to deal with. So I dove into the world of fire sprinkler designs. So I worked for a subcontractor here in the Des Moines area for 5 years. And then I was a design manager for them. And then I realized that, hey, I'm checking plans here before we send them up for a permit. I might as well do the same thing on the other side of the fence. And it turns out it's a completely different perspective. And there's a lot of different stuff that goes into it. But it's great. I work with some amazing people. It's really fun and it's very humbling to get to work alongside all the Des Moines firefighters here. So,
well, we're lucky to have such a professional crew on board, and I know that you're part of that. So when you're talking about being on the other side of the table, what are some of the more common challenges that you encounter when evaluating these fire plans that come in, whether they're sprinkler, whether they're alarm, whether they're special hazards, those types of things?
Yeah, I think for me, it was really eye-opening trying to a little bit be the middleman between contractors and designers and building owners. And then on the other side of that is the firefighters that are showing up in a high-stress situation, trying to have as much information provided to them as possible and make it clear and understandable in a way that they can act on that, not just maybe make the wrong assumptions or maybe assuming that they would know what to do when, in fact, they might not or might not have familiarity with that. So that, to me, was very eye-opening and just connecting those dots there It's still a challenge and a learning process for me. So,
I know that the city of Des Moines doesn't necessarily promulgate their own standards. They adopt, you know, International Building Code, International Fire Code, NFPA. How often does your department review those particular standards and which ones they will adopt?
So we team up with the building department and we try to keep all of our, so we follow the International Code Council set of documents. So the International Fire Code, International Building Code, and the whole other list of codes in there. So we roughly look at that on a 3-year code cycle. And as a part of that, we do and team up with the Central Iowa Code Consortium. So the goal of that organization is to try to standardize some things with our neighbors here. So we have the whole metro area is trying to be representative, and we're trying to come to some compromises so that instead of crossing a city border and having to build a building completely differently than you would if it was in Des Moines versus West Des Moines or something like that. The goal there is to try to make things a little more uniform and more predictable for developers. So level in the playing field, and we've had some good success with that, and we got a lot of work to do still, but yeah, we're currently on the 2021 IFC, and I think next year we'll be looking at going to the new code cycles there too. So
You know, you mentioned this cooperative effort, the Central Iowa Code Consortium group. Is that that's kind of a newer model for metro and adjoining communities, isn't it? I mean, that's kind of a unique cooperative event, as I recall.
It's really exciting to see how we can try to work together, but it's also tough to kind of make those compromises work. It tends to lead to people wanting to go to the more restrictive code requirements all the time. And sometimes the more restrictive code requirement is not the best fit for all the different cities, because Des Moines has, we don't have a ton amount of high rises in the city, but we do have a decent amount. And other cities having requirements that might apply to high rises when they only have maybe a handful of them might not be reasonable for them. So every city is a little bit different, and that's where it kind of makes it tough too. And sometimes it's easy to paint with too broad of a brush and being overly restrictive. So that is, that has been the challenge so far with it, but it's also really encouraging to see that we can work together. We can try to, not just live in our own little silos and have different requirements too. So,
Well, it, being of the cooperative nature that that is, you certainly exhibit that by your leadership, in the Hawkeye State Fire Inspectors Association. Could you share a little bit about what initiatives, your group has undertaken to promote, fire safety awareness and education across the state of Iowa?
Yeah. So the Hawkeye holds a fall conference every year, and I just wrapped up my year of serving as president of that organization.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm glad to have it in the rearview mirror.
I
quickly learned that an event planner is a very like respectable position, because I am horrible at it. So I'm glad that's behind me. But yes, that was a, we have that every year. At least a 2-day conference, sometimes three. This year was kind of 2.5, where we did a tour of a building and we brought people in to look at elevators inside of a high rise, and we can go through, and it was a little bit of a train the trainer. So we had a lot of fire marshals, fire inspectors, things like that, making sure that they actually know how to use these life safety systems that we require developers and contractors to put in these buildings. To me is a really important thing. So if they're going to spend the money to do a code requirement, the fire service should at least know and be comfortable with using those features. So that was the goal with the elevator side of it on that first tour. And then we had 2 full-day classes where we got to get some continuing education credits and then just update people on current code requirements, things that might have changed in codes, and just trying to make us all better and taking time to sharpen the axe. So
Well, thank you, know, congratulations and thank you for your leadership of that group. I once was in a committee group with building code officials, you know, building plan reviewers, and as well as your compatriots on the fire side of the equation. And one of the more interesting aspects that I picked up on is that the fire guys, like yourself, were making the case that as they look at these different standards across jurisdictions, whether it's, you know, neighbor or neighbor or across the state, the reality is it's the fire department that is going to have to, quote unquote, live with the building. They're going to have to live with, you know, how that building was built and the standards that were used. Whereas the building code officials, once they sign off on the plans and the building, you know, gets their certificate of occupancy, they're on to the next project, right? And yep. I think that is a huge responsibility, because the codes and standards that come into building a building really have to look at clearly the life of the building, but also how are you going to preserve life and the property should a bad day happen, right? And I think that that's kind of where some of the products that Knox offers really start to play a role. And it's not just the Knox box that allows the fire department to show up, but it's the other tools such as the gate padlocks and the fire department connection caps and the gate switches. What success or what luck has the Des Moines Fire Department had in promoting some of these other products that Knox offers?
So just with the basic lock boxes, I love just the human behavior side of it where, I'm a nerd, so my wife knows that when fire alarms go off, we take them seriously. And she was at a convention center downtown here, and everyone was walking right past an exit that said, do not use unless there's an emergency on it. And she charged right up and pulled the door open and tried to direct people out that instead of going all the way through the building back towards the main entrance.
Yes,
and someone even said to her, like, hey, we shouldn't use this. And she's like, it's an emergency. The building thinks it's on fire and it's telling us to get out. So this is the quickest way out. And so it's kind of one of those things too. Like if you show up to a building that's on fire, it may or may not actually be on fire. It may or may not actually be a true emergency. So do we need to break down that door? And at what point, when you do start doing forcible entry and use the Halligan or your axe on that door, are you comfortable with making that decision? Because I know in the back of my mind, it would be like, well, did I actually check every single opening on this building to make sure that one of them's not already unlocked?
Or
am I going to hear over the radio that, oh, this is just something we don't even get into as soon as I damage the door? So just taking away that risk and fear by having something where we can just unlock the door really can help on these situations where it might not be that obvious if there's a true emergency or not. Maybe there's water flowing inside the building and causing damage that way because a sprinkler system froze up or something along those lines. And instead of just standing there because we don't see fire shooting out of the roof, we can get in that much quicker, shut off the sprinkler system and minimize some damage that way. So usually when I have those conversations with owners, they're very accepting and understanding of that. It's not that we want unrestricted access to your building at any time.
It's for us
to help them keep their building safe. Because we're also in the business of property protection and not just life safety. Sure. So any minimizing of damage is a win for us. So.
Yeah, it's so important. And I'm so glad you mentioned that, you know, the owners have a responsibility to keep their buildings safe for their people and for the property, right?
Yes.
And these tools that you mentioned are ways, and I think that they are, in the larger scheme of things, I think they're really inexpensive in terms of the larger overall cost of the entire, you know, facility, but the benefit is so great over time, especially, and as you say, is that really a false alarm, you know, or we don't yes. see fire, you know, shooting out of the top. So yeah, it's a great application for those types of things. And I know that Des Moines has done a very good job of helping owners, like you say, understand the value proposition that these implements really help them to keep their properties safe for their people and safe for the property itself. You know, I don't think it would be a fair interview, Jeremy, if I didn't get your opinion on the impact that you see either happening today or coming in the future of artificial intelligence on fire systems and the impact that they might have, but also on the impact that they might have on fire departments. Could you, have you peeked into the future and thought about that?
A little bit. I know when ChatGPT came out, it was it's a fun little toy we tried to use here in the office to update some of our documents and things like that. But I do think there's a ton of potential there. Unfortunately, just with the robustness that we require of life safety systems, I think it's still a little ways off before we see it integrated into like a fire alarm panel or things like that. But if there would be the ability to have a panel that can somehow see that there's a repeated nuisance alarm or like a dirty detector and
right.
treat that one a little differently than maybe something that would be a real emergency, and just have that continued learning as a part of the building. I mean, we have buildings all the time where it's everyone just ignores the fire alarm because we know that same silly smoke detector went off again for the 10th time this week. So
yes.
Things like that where it could like self-learn and self-correct because it might not be a faulty detector. It's just potentially installed in a silly spot where it shouldn't be. Things like that, I think there's a lot of potential for. And then also just things on our side too with technology, with getting us to the correct scene faster, looking at alternative routes. And we've kind of been jealous of some fire departments have some drones that they can throw up into the sky. And instead of having to hop the fence and run around the backside of the house and make sure there's nothing else going on that's unpredicted there, we call it a 360. So they'll walk all the way around the building.
Sure.
If you could throw a drone in the air and then you have live stream footage of the front and the backside. That seems like it'd be handy, but there's a lot of challenges that go into all that stuff too, and how dependable and reliable, and we need it to be efficient. So,
I'm hopeful. We all are, and
yes.
all hopeful for the best use of protecting lives and property. Friends, we've been visiting with Jeremy Eekhoff, who is a fire protection engineer with the City of Des Moines Fire Department, talking about his role as an AHJ, but also some of the impacts that he and the organizations that he is a part of help to promote fire safety throughout the area. So, Jeremy, before we sign off, I always try to come up with some kind of takeaway that is beneficial for our listeners. And so, as we conclude today's discussion, I would ask you, how can our listeners who might be residents, who might be business owners, building managers, and other stakeholders, what's the best way to support a fire department's efforts to enhance fire safety and rapid access?
I think a lot of it is just the common sense education types of things. So making sure we're not blocking doors. It sounds like an obvious thing, but it's really tempting and convenient to do a lot of times. So making sure your exit paths are clear, making sure you're not making hurdles and obstacles inside of buildings that aren't really necessary if we do need to come into the building so that we don't get ourselves lost or tangled up, and just helping out that way, making sure those exit signs are visible and not covered up just because it's a bright little red light. So things like that, following just taking time to think, like, what would a firefighter be able to do if they were walking up to this building, and is it going to be a building that they would expect to see? So
yeah Yeah. Well, Jeremy, thank you so much for visiting with us today. I know you and your department provide wonderful, wonderful response and services to the citizens of Des Moines, but also the influence that you have with your fellow mutual aid departments around Central Iowa. So we appreciate that.
Yeah. Thank you, Sean. This has been fun.
Thank you for listening today. Plan to join us again when our guest will be Carl Schaphorst, Certified Sandler Sales Trainer with Schaphorst & Associates, and his role in helping companies improve rapid access to higher performance and better interpersonal relationships.